I'm going to call the meeting to order. Committee on Early Childhood Learning Finance. What we'd like to do, we want to welcome everyone here who is here today to testify. We're going to do basically three different groups. So the first group would be child care. The second group will be ECFB, School Readiness and Head Start. And then the third group would be ABE and Lifelong Learning. And then we're going to have 10 minutes of questions kind of after your group. So what we wanted to do is have Tammy Anderson and Jenny Bergman come down to the testifying table. And then if Denise Welty and Lisa Thompson and Jamie Edwards could sit kind of in the back. So you kind of have your people that are on deck in the back seats and your people that are up testifying. We think this might be the fastest process. To go, we wanted to do this today to share with the legislators about what's happening out in the community, and so we can all hear the stories about what's happening in your own communities in terms of child care, for ECFD, for Head Start, and for school readiness. I think that we've had a lot of things happening over the last couple of years legislatively. We know there's been a lot of cuts. There's also been a lot of legislative changes, so we'll be interested to hear your testimony, and we'll also be interested in asking you some questions. So, welcome to, you have 4 minutes, and Sarah will be holding up cards as to when to stop. I know it's not very long, but we want to fit everybody in, so we very much appreciate you being here. We also now have a quorum, so let's see, Representative Bly. You've got a chance to read the minutes?
Yes. And I'll move that we...
Okay. Representative Bly has moved approval of the minutes for February 1st. Is there any discussion? And hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Well, welcome to the committee. If you could say your name for the record, and I know I've seen you before, Tammy Anderson, right?
Yes, thank you. My name is Tammy Anderson, and I'm a licensed child care center director. It's a little typo in the agenda. And I'm from Fergus Falls, Minnesota, West Central Minnesota, and I'm actually here wearing the hat of president of our West Central Minnesota Directors Association. There's about 16 nonprofit center directors who've been meeting monthly for about 16 years or so. And our purpose is to kind of help support each other and help keep each other open and help support quality child care. And I appreciate the Early Childhood Committee. It's another voice for us early childhood people, so we appreciate the fact that you're doing that. I'll be quick because there's lots I could talk about for days probably. But two things we wanted to bring to your attention. One, we're really hoping that the half day is reinstated for people using the Child Care Sliding Fee Program. That was really devastating in our rural community, especially because there's not a lot of providers who would even take part-time families, and we've been able to try to help those families. And since the half-day program was eliminated, people just can't afford it anymore. And one thing I wanted to read to you was the mission statement of the sliding fee program, and it says to reduce, according to the sliding fee schedule, the cost of child care services for eligible families to enable them to seek or retain employment. That is the mission statement, but it's not supporting families who are part-time, maybe going to school, maybe just working part-time. And it also caused a lot of our school-age children, 8, 9, 10-year-olds, who are left home alone. We don't have hardly any school-age kids like we used to, and they're being left alone. So that's one thing I want you to keep in mind.
Yes. We have a lot of new legislators on the panel. Just briefly mention what switching to the half-day meant?
Sure. There used to be a half-day rate and a full-day rate. So parents only needing 1, 2, 3 hours of care before school, after care, the county used to do a half-day block, and they eliminated that and went to hourly. So what's happened then is they'll only pay maybe an hour a day, but yet we staff our teachers 3 hours for after-school care. And everybody else pays a block, which happens to be $12 for a three-hour block, and the county won't do that anymore. So the parents are having to pay sometimes like $10 a day extra besides their copay, and they just can't do it. And we can't afford to cover the cost because we make no money anyway. So does that make sense?
Yep, thank you. We'll give you an extra minute.
Oh, good. I was hoping I didn't use up my time. And the other thing I just wanted to mention was I did hand you out some packets some director friends of mine want to make sure that you took time to read it because they really had to think hard about what they wanted to tell you. But I think the number one way that we can achieve high quality is to have top-notch teachers, which makes sense. But the difficult time we're having in rural Minnesota is trying to find those high-quality people who have college degrees who are willing to work for $8, $9 an hour, no retirement, no benefits at all. And I'm not saying I want that to be lax. I don't want you to leave the meeting saying, oh, then we need to loosen up those rules. The rules are good. We want really good people. We have to find a way to draw and attract those people. And the only way to do that is to pay them a decent wage. And that's what we're having trouble finding. And actually, we're losing some of our good staff to the fast food industry. McDonald's, Hardee's, because they have full-time benefits. And they have wages that are better than ours, which is frightening and it's appalling. And we run in a very tight budget. Just for example, our program is a $300,000 budget, and there's 16 employees. So if you do the math, there's not a lot of money generated. And one of the problems is because our program, I think, has about over 50% using the sliding fee program, and because we serve everybody's children, we kind of have a ceiling or a max of what we can even charge. Because if we charge what we really need to, 50% of our families couldn't come. And everybody needs quality child care, not just the middle class, not just the high income earners. So that's a challenge for us to have our rates where they should be. And 75% of our income goes towards payroll. So the math is very, very challenging. And I can be honest and say if our program didn't do aggressive grant writing and fundraising, we would be closed. And we have lost several in our region child care centers, one just in the past year. And two are in crisis right now. Our group is trying to help help them grant write and try to get things going in the right direction for them. So thank you.
Well, thank you, and thanks for coming all the way down from Fergus Falls. And I know you also that, if you don't know, Tammy's dad is Representative Nornes, and so there was that connection there.
That's okay.
Oh, well,
I brought my son to this here in the audience.
Oh, is that, in the tie?
In the little suit.
Oh.
He's a future politician. So.
Oh. I thought you were going to testify.
No? I could.
Well, thank you. What a great, great young man, and thanks for coming down today.
You're welcome.
And next, if you welcome to the committee, if you could say your name and where you're from for the record.
My name is Jenny Bergman. On my agenda, it says that I'm a licensed child care provider. I have been licensed in my home for over 7 years. I was asked today mostly to come just as a parent, though. I'm mother of three children, ages 10, 8, and 3 and a half. And I am also almost done working on my early childhood degree at Bethel University. And I'm a lifetime resident of Isani County. Right now I live in Cambridge. I'm privileged and honored to talk to you today about young children. I believe they're all gifts to us, and I am blessed to work with them. I see much value in investing in children before they reach the kindergarten age. I don't think I have to do much convincing today of the importance of learning. I think we all value that, or we wouldn't be here today. Even before the age of three, there is so much happening with brain development, and if some of the connections are not made at an early age, then the process will be more difficult later, and it will slow down the learning process. Children need to be in environments rich with opportunities to play and learn so they have opportunities to develop what they have and be ready for kindergarten at age five. I see some that are ready and some that aren't ready for kindergarten, and I understand that we might be able to reach those who are not ready and help them get there, and I think that's great. How we should do it might not be as easy as why. We all believe in the importance of development and learning for the young child, but where do we start? I'm speaking to you today as a parent. I am the most important teacher in my child's life at this stage of development. That might change as they get older. Jake's 10, and soon algebra and calculus will be around the corner, and then I probably won't be the most important teacher in those areas. But just as any other parent in this room is the primary teacher for their child, right now I'm the primary teacher for my own. And parents need to be empowered with the skills and support that they need to teach their own children. First, I believe there should be positive accessibility for parent education in order for parents to know how to provide their own child with a rich learning environment. If parents really are the number one teacher, They should be educated for the job. Education should also equip parents to make good choices. Good choices about complementing their learning experience with other opportunities such as preschool, in a public or in a private setting. If we target helping children only in the public setting, we have made the choice for the parent. And if my child might be one of the 40% who is not ready for kindergarten, and I want help getting him there, I want to be able to choose the learning environment because I think that is the best for that child, not because it's the only one that offers the programming needed for his success. We also need to consider the family who chooses to or needs to send a young child to daycare. Learning opportunities take place in centers, both public and private, and in private homes. My home is one example. Again, if we limit the choice to a public setting, we have made the choice for the parent. And if we truly believe that parents are the primary teacher of their child, we need to be sure that we do not limit their choice to getting an education in a public setting only. Children are so diverse in their personalities, needs, and learning styles that parents need to be able to make the right choice for each individual child. Some children need a busy center. Some need the family atmosphere of a home, and some get all the learning they need right at home. All of those children will reach the same goals using different tools. We need to allow this to happen. We all want to see children succeed, and the best place to start is with the family at an early age.
Thank you very much. If you can sit in the back, and then we're going to have some round of questions after. Next we have Denise Welpe and Lisa Thompson. If you can come to the table. You know, members, I am going to ask you to introduce yourselves because we have a lot of folks here that have been nice enough to come in, and also for the audience, just so you know which members we have here. Maybe your name, your district, and how long you've, what term you're in. Representative Galtwell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Steve Gottwald, first term, representing District 15A, which is St. Cloud, Way Park, Rockville, and St. Augusta. And I'm Representative Bud Nornes. This is my 11th year. Represent the District 10A, which includes Fruiters Falls and part of Otter Tail County. I'm Representative Rob Eastland. This is my 7th year in the legislature. I represent District 17A, which is most of Isani County, Cambridge, cities of Cambridge and Isani and St. Francis.
I'm Carolyn Lane. I'm from the Columbia Heights, Ridley area, and it's my first term.
I'm Erin Murphy, and I am from 64A in St. Paul, and I am also in my first term.
I'm Nora Slawick, Maplewood and Oakdale, and I'm in my 5th term.
I'm Representative David Bly, District 25B in Northfield and Belle Plaine.
Representative Sandra Peterson, West Suburban area, and that includes New Hope, Crystal, and Plymouth, for the second term.
Representative Patty Fritz, second term. I represent parts of Rice and part of Steele County. I live in Faribault, Minnesota.
Representative John Ward, representing first term, representing Brainerd, Baxter, Crosby, Arrington, Nisswa, Central Minnesota.
Lynn Wardlow from Egan, District 38B, eastern half of Egan.
Thank you. Thank you, members. I think it's good to see we're from all over the state in this committee, literally, so it hopefully gives you a picture, too. Well, welcome to the committee, if you could state your name for the record and where you live.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Denise Welty. I'm a family child care provider from Rochester. I'm in my 26th year. However, today this is like the first term for me because I've never done this. I'm also uniting with Service Employees International Union Kids First, which represents over 200,000 child care and early childhood educators across the nation. I'm here today to speak for providers that couldn't be here because we all know how busy child care family providers are. I've met with many unlicensed or family, friend, and neighbor providers from all over the metro and in Rochester. One woman I met who couldn't be here today is caring for her two grandkids. Her granddaughter from Hennepin County has been on the basic sliding fee waiting list for about a year. In the meantime, her own daughter can't pay her for the time and expenses in caring for her grandkids. You know, what would you do if you had a job that couldn't pay you for a whole year? But of course, being her grandkids and the love that she has for them, she sticks with it. But it isn't without cost. because she puts her own money into the learning materials, the diapers, the food, whatever needed for the care. In fact, Grandma took a night job to cover the expenses and added costs for caring for her grandchildren. Her grandkids are lucky to have her in their life, but we shouldn't leave the care of our most precious resource to luck. And I have another story I want to read you from a gal I know in St. Cloud. Her name is Tanya Shorter. And she writes, I've been a licensed child care provider in St. Cloud for more than 25 years. I've been past president of the Stearns Benton Family Child Care Association. Caring for kids is a calling for me. I care for 6 children right now between the ages of 5 months and up to 4 years. Mine is the only income in my household. After the 2003 budget cuts, I got phone calls from people who asked me, will I take on county assistance? People with counties that need county assistance. Of course, I always said that would what I'm here for. I would never not take kids on county assistance. I began to suspect that they didn't qualify for assistance because of funding cuts because they never called me back. Then last week, one of the parents did call. After contacting me, he learned that his income was barely high enough to qualify for assistance, but he still couldn't afford the child care. His wife was planning on going back to school to finish her degree, but instead, now she has to take care of their child. This is exactly who the child care assistance program should be helping. There are a lot of parents across the state of Minnesota in this position. The higher co-pays are difficult for parents, and common sense tells me that if they are applying for aid from the county, they can't afford to pay the $100 a week out of pocket for co-pay. And I personally believe that all children deserve quality child care, whether it comes from a grandparent, a great-grandparent, an aunt, or family child care. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Denise and I did meet, and she very much wants to bring the story of family child care providers here up to the Capitol, so we'll hopefully use it as a future resource as well. Lisa? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lisa Thompson, and I live here in St. Paul. I've been an in-home family child care provider for the past 14 years. And before that, I substitute taught. I worked in child care centers. I have my elementary teaching degree. I found that the best way to teach and follow my calling was to teach children in my home, and I was best able to serve my own family as well. I have, for the past year, been working with other child care providers in the county and across the state to join together, like Denise, with the child care union, child care providers together with AFSCME. There are over 800 providers in Ramsey County, and more than half of them have signed up to be involved in this. And one of the most significant reasons is that we need to be here talking to you all. We're making choices about the laws that affect the children that we care for and the laws and policies that affect our businesses. So I'm here representing those people here that couldn't be here today, like Denise. And the difference of in-home family child care is maybe not apparent in the beginning. We're not necessarily grandparents or neighbors or friends. Many of us, a significant percentage of us, are choosing this as our profession. We're professionals. We're choosing this as our career, the same as people in child care centers or in public schools or in Head Starts. Many of us are struggling to support our own families with this kind of income, but it's what we believe in, it's what we do. We have a priority to educate children. We want to ready our children going into kindergarten the same way that Head Start teachers do and other centers. There are many, there are a few programs right now that are starting to recognize that in-home family child care is a significant point of service for reaching children and educating children in those early years. We all know how important that those first 5 years are, and we're right here. If you count the number of providers in just Ramsey County and how many children they're serving, we're talking about thousands of children, and we need to not be forgotten in the programs and the policies that are being made for early childhood. We're serving a lot of children, not only in Ramsey County, but all across the state. We're not babysitters, and we're really working hard to make sure the children are ready for kindergarten. We need the stability for our own families to continue to do business. Parents of young children can't afford to pay any more for child care than they are already. But family child care providers can't afford to do it any less expensively. So in order for child care, quality child care, to be available not only to parents who can afford no ceiling on their child care costs, but also parents who are paying 20, 30, 40% of their income to have their children taken care of while they're working. We need to make sure that everyone has that choice and that children are not being left behind, no matter what their income of their parents are. So help us, please, to continue to build our community of child care providers and to improve the children's learning efforts and to support us to stay in business and provide good quality child care. Thank you.
Thank you. We're next, we have Jamie Edwards. Jamie's going to come down, and then we're going to have about 10 minutes of questions, so I'd like you to think about questions you've been thinking about for child care providers. Both we have rural and urban child care providers here, or about their business, or about what the state has been doing, or trends, or all those kinds of things. Welcome to the committee, if you could state your name and for the record.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and community members. My name is Jamie Edwards. I'm originally from Rapid City, South Dakota, enrolled member of the Oglala Sioux Nation of Pine Ridge, South Dakota. I'm also a parent of a 2- and 4-year-old girls who are part of the Wakoi Nandaki Kigbin Immersion Program in Minneapolis. This is a Dakota Ojibwe program for children, also in a child care center. The reason why I'm here today is to speak on behalf of all parents in my community who are working and are ultimately losing the child care grants that were given to them earlier this year. My children have been out of daycare and the immersion program since December. So unfortunately they haven't been able to get the quality care that they have received since birth. With this program, my children are learning their language and culture, not only at school, but also from other children in their class through this child care program. The Ojibwe Immersion Program has greatly influenced my girls' lives by giving them not only the safe, healthy learning environment, but by keeping our culture and our language alive. Right now, seeing them not able to interact with children their own age and be a part of this program has been heartbreaking. But how do you explain to a 2- and 4-year-old that, they can't go to school because mommy can't afford it? So that is one reason why I'm here today, to make sure that it's heard through my voice for other parents in my community that, please keep the cost and the funds available to these child care programs, including the Ojibwe program that my girls are enrolled with, to help better their future. Thank you.
Members, do you have questions? And we can either call, do the members have the names of the testifiers, right? If you have the names, if you want to call someone by name, or if you have some general questions, I just know there's some questions out there. Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was curious about the association that I think Ms. Welty talked about, and I'm wondering what kinds of, is that just a professional association? What kinds of services do they provide?
Right.
And I'm particularly interested in professional development. So,
the way we work this at the legislature is I will call on you, and then we go through the chair. So, Ms. Welty, and then you say, Madam Chair, and then answer.
Okay.
This is the way we do this.
Okay.
It is for the tape, so we know who's talking when.
Sure. Yeah. Madam Chair, the association of that you're talking about is a family. It's made up family child care providers, and most, a lot of counties have, you know, local associations, and they do a lot of things for the community. They're a networking organization. They raise money. They provide classes that we need to continue to keep our license. We have to have so many hours in a year, and a lot of time your family associations provide that. So it's mainly made up of all family child care providers.
Representative,
does that answer your question?
Madam Chair, Ms. Welty, who provides the professional development then? Who are the teachers for that?
Well, it just depends on the county. They get speakers from all over the state. We've had Ready for K. They've had, you know, just different people come in and talk to the providers. You know, and it just depends on the training. It may be car seat training, and that it might be the county health department. It solely depends on the association.
Representative Peterson?
This is then like a network, a loose network. It's not something you join. It is a network of just a communication network of providers. Is that what I'm hearing?
Sure.
Ms. Wolfe?
Yes. Pretty much, they do pay dues. They are, yeah, it's very professional. It's, you know, for family child care. And like in Olmsted County, I think there's 500, that's where I'm from in Rochester, there's 500 child care providers, and I roughly think there's like maybe 200, 250 that belong to the association. They have banquets at Provider of the Year.
Okay. Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and for Ms. Thompson, please. You made a statement in your testimony that we're not babysitters, that we're professionals. And you're here sharing your story, which I appreciate. And because we're a finance division, we're going to be hearing, you know, a lot about financial requests. But I'm wondering if you have information or advice for us about other things that we can do to help family child care providers make that transition you're describing from what had been in the past in-home babysitters to professionals, the professionals that you are.
Ms. Thompson.
Madam Chair. There are many new licensing requirements, the number of hours that we're required to complete in class training each year. Those help advance our professionalism. Many of the standards that are and requirements that are in place for licensing help improve the or help maintain a standard of professionalism. Being able to earn a fair wage and a wage that's comparable to our professional ability is a good way to support people that are well-trained educators to continue in this business. There are several programs, Teach and Retain, that help with grants to help retain good quality, highly educated, long-term veteran providers to stay in the field. Some of the other programs that have been recommended recently the scholarships to young children if they're at risk children to be in a quality program. I don't want family child care providers to be overlooked. There are many in-home child care providers that are running outstanding programs that provide a niche that a center or a Head Start can't provide. We have small groups. We are often culturally appropriate to many of the families. Many of the providers that are involved with the organization, the union that I've been involved in, CCPT, we have a large percentage of providers that are Hmong speaking, and they're serving families that only speak Hmong, and they're able to access this kind of education and training, but they're able to do it in a culturally appropriate and language appropriate way, getting children ready for kindergarten the same whether it's in English or another language.
Thank you. Representative Butler?
Madam Chair, thank you. I'll direct this question, if I may, to Tammy, but also to the others as well. I think our committee, we're finance-based, but we're focused on trying to do the best we can for children in this early childhood, the pre-K period of their life, regardless of what setting that's done in. And I appreciated the testimony I heard about the need for non-institutional-based or public-based daycare. What are some things that are being done by you as home-based or community-based daycare providers to connect with the parents of the children you're caring for? And what are some things the state could be doing better in its programming to connect better with the parents, to tie them into this?
Ms. Anderson?
Madam Chair? And I'm hoping to pronounce your name right, Representative Gutwalt.
Gutwalt.
Knew I'd wreck it. Let's see. Well, I think for center-based programs, connecting to parents is, I think, relatively easy because a lot of the requirements that we have to do clinses twice a year. We do daily notes home to the parents for all of our ages, birth to school age, so they know exactly what their child did that day, ate that day, slept that day, what they liked that day. Parents really enjoy that connection piece because they feel like they're missing out. We do a ton of digital photography, email them to work, tons of pictures home so they can really feel a part of what their child is doing. Plus, we have a good connection with the community and the K-12 system, so we work a lot with them in helping assess children because we're not trained in a lot of the, autism spectrums and stuff. So we bring in people and work with parents on the best, needs of their children. As far as what you guys can do, there's some, I think, unique opportunities. And one thing, and I don't know if there's programming out there or not, but one great area that we're seeing is grandparents who are raising the grandchildren. And we've actually started our own support group because it was totally non-existent in our entire county. So we just did it. It's all volunteers. I'm the facilitator. So I'm learning a lot. I'm hoping somebody else does it because it kind of feels like an area I'm not an expertise in, but I'm getting there. So if that's an area. I think just taking a lot of the stress off families with the child care sliding fee program, that loses a lot of connections we have to families because they're so stressed and they're so busy that if we could remove that stress factor, it would help us really connect up with families. It's been a real interesting past 2 years, and this is, I think, the last 2 years has been the most high stress I've ever seen parents and even employers. If you have any input, employers, this is the worst I've seen for employers helping support families. I can't tell you how many families are sending their children sick because they're afraid they're going to get fired. And so parents are put in a place where they're making very bad choices for their children because they're put into that position.
Representative Gottwald?
Madam Chair, just wondering if any of the others have some comments about that connection with the parents. And we've heard some of this. As kind of a background, we've heard some of this from the perspectives of people with various programs, from the departments in state government, from public school people. It'd be good to hear that from your perspective, the connection with the parents.
Madam Chair?
Yes, what we'll have, if you would answer, and then we'll have Representative Fritz, and then we'll need to move on to the next section. But I just want to also say that Gottwald is chairing a work group on this particular issue, so he is beginning to explore the ways, better ways, the state could be involved with in parental involvement. So if any of you are interested, I don't know, Representative Gottwald, if you want, you might have a big line, but you can contact him more about that, too.
Oh. Madam Chair, I have one taker so far, but I'd welcome others.
Ms. Thompson?
Thank you. One of the things that we're working on here in Ramsey County is we're working with the county departments to form a task force to be a go-between between the other county programs like public health and licensing and the reimbursement programs, the caseworkers with the reimbursement programs, so that the providers and the county programs have a go-between, someone that kind of a central outputting and inputting of information. Family child care providers are in the unique position to form relationships with families much more intimately and long-term in ways of hooking families up with the resources in the community. There's also another program that I've been involved with here in St. Paul. It's with the St. Paul Public Schools. It's called Project Early Kindergarten. And a large part of that, it not only involves training, but also involves having literacy coaches come into the homes of family child care providers. It's a program that works with centers as well as family home child care providers. But a nice component with that is including the families and teaching families how to encourage and increase literacy for children. Just two examples.
Thank you. You know, we've had one person I'm going to call down that was supposed to be in this group. Well, and if she can come, Teresa Ross can come down and to testify with this group. But then we also have one more question. So is she here? Or she's right here? Or, yeah, you can come down. You can bring your son if you want. You know, we had toys. So I had the page. I talked to Paige about should we get the toys out and put them in the middle and the kids. And so we could... We can still do that if it's not. We can see about that. But Representative Fritz, why don't you ask your question?
Well, I have a comment and a question. First of all, I see the information sheet here on numerous reasons in rural Minnesota that the YD centers are under stress. And my question is to all of you, the low wages, I'm curious about. It's been many years. My youngest, I think, is 36, and I have 17 grandchildren. And believe me, Christmas is enough for me. So I applaud you and thank you for what you do. I feel like I'm nibbled to death by ducks when they're all home, and so you must feel that way every day. Yes, and so, you know, and I was fortunate as a nurse, you know, way back, and my five children actually, you know, one raised the next, and that's how we did things, and I really feel as though I raised them over the phone often. You know, I'd call when I had a break to see how things were going. My husband was a professional firefighter, so he worked 24 on, 24 off, and, you know, then I worked nights, and we did shift work. We were fortunate to have that. But, you know, it's amazing to me. And I do know that in my own district there are quite a few very good providers, but I do know that the wages are very low. And I just sort of wanted to know per hour, can you pick a number, give me a number?
Well, on average, I don't have schooling, but I mean $10 to $11 an hour, and that's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to do right now is going to college for nursing. So
okay.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Ms. Robinson, Representative Fritz, do you want to have...
Thank you. And also, you know, I see the regulations, and I in the providers' homes that I've been to, I feel like I'm walking into a kindergarten setting. It takes on a life of its own in your homes because you are professional. And so I'm just wondering also about the licensing fees that you have to pay. How much are they? What are they?
Madam Chair.
Ms. Walty?
Yes. Thank you. Family child care is what I am licensing. Our licensing fee in Olmsted County is the highest in the state right now. It's $150 for a license and $100 for background check yearly. Over a five-year period, we pay 13 times more than our teachers, and we pay more than our Mayo doctors do. And getting back to the wage real quickly, if I may, as an in-home child care provider, I'm in my 26th year. I'm also a grandmother and raised a lot of kids. And our wages are very low when you consider the hours we put in. I think the average provider probably puts in 66 hours a week. So when you break that down, what we get paid, it's probably a couple bucks an hour by the time you get done. We have no sick days, no vacation days, no benefits whatsoever. We're in it for the kids.
Thank you, Representative. Paula, what do you do then? I mean, when you have an emergency and you have to shut down, who comes in? How, do you have that covered? Or do you just call everyone and they all have to find grandma?
This one,
how does that work? Madam Chair.
We have to be short because we're going to have to move on.
I'll be very short. We do have a list of emergency backup care that can come in. Otherwise, we shut down, and most of the time it's lost wage.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate thank you. Sorry to give a bunch more, but good questions. And if you would like to testify, if you could state your name for the record.
My name is Natalie Ross.
And proceed with your testimony.
I'm just here to introduce myself. I'm a parent. I'm single, 26 years old, and I'm just here to tell you the importance of scholarships for daycares. I have full custody of my brother and sister. They're 12 and 14. I have a 2.5-year-old son. I've had them for 3 years. So prior to my son even being born, I had custody of my brother and my sister. I've worked my whole life since I was 14 years old. When my son was first born, I worked 55 hours per week and 42 weekends out of the year. I could not afford daycare for him. I only made $11 an hour working as a medical secretary, which was all I did was work. I didn't see my son at all. I saw him maybe 3 hours a week. And I decided that I was never going to get on assistance because I thought I could just make it on my own. I felt like I should just have to try to figure it out. When I first decided that my son needed daycare, I called 12 churches in the surrounding areas. Everybody said no, they could not help me with daycare assistance. They said that that wasn't something that they helped with, but they would help with food shelf, but not daycare. I called 12 different places, and then finally, after 3 months of looking, I found Interfaith Outreach Community Partners in the Wayzata area that referred me to a place called Kids Care Connection, the only church that would allow scholarship help. I waited then for 2.5 years on the waiting list, through the Hennepin County for daycare assistance. So after 2.5 years, I finally was approved for daycare assistance. They gave me 1 month to find a job. I had 7 interviews, 6 years of experience, and I did not get hired at any of the places. They told me that I needed a degree, and so right now at this point I'm enrolled at North Hennepin Community College. I have to wait until April to start my classes, so the state had suspended me from my daycare assistance, stating that I had to wait until April to have it be reopened again. And that was just 1 month they gave me after not working for 4 months after getting the kids and everything else. And I don't know, I just think that it's really important that people have scholarship help who are trying to go to college, who are taking care of siblings or people, other than their own children. At first he started out on a part-time basis. I donated a couple $1,000 worth of stuff to them. I donated my time, but that's not money. So after 2 months, my daycare assistance, was denied. And then now I'm at the point where I have to wait until April to start my classes. I have no daycare help, no scholarship help, and at this point I feel like I don't know if I should pull them out of daycare or just try to find a job that I can work for 2 months and then not tell the employer that I have to quit because I'm going to be starting college full time. So I don't know how to do it, but what I'm here to do today is just urge you guys to find it in your hearts to approve some of these bills so that some families can make it, and if you can't, then some of us might not.
Thank you. Thank you for coming today, and thank you for sharing your story. These are the kind of stories, members, we need to hear and remember that as we're going through our process that there's real people involved. So Thank you very much. You know, we are going to have to move to the next group. So thank you all. If you want to come back out, and we're going to call up Roxanne Sandoval and Lisa Malika, and Alfonsina Gutierrez, right? If we could have the three from all from Northfield take the testimony stand. After them will be Mary Ellen Sparrow, Jeff Forrester, and then Deepa Dealwis and Maureen Brazil Sawyer. So is Roxanne.
Hi, my name is Roxanne Sandoval, and I live in Northfield. I have three children. Out of those three children, two have attended and completed the Head Start program. I also have been a member in a policy council for the Three Rivers Head Start for 2 years. About a year and a half ago, we were completely cut off from child care assistance, which in turn caused us to have financial setbacks. At this time, daycare is not affordable for us, so therefore I only work part-time position, and my husband has to work a seasonal position to help out with daycare in the winter months. My oldest son comes home from school. He's 10 years old. He comes home about 3:30, and he waits there until I get home at 5:15. Even though Rice County allows a 10-year-old to be home alone for 2 hours and he can call me, I rather prefer he be in a daycare environment. But unfortunately, we are not able to provide that daycare environment for him because of our financial situation. Our worst struggle yet is summertime when the children are out of school. It's nearly impossible to find a position to work on a temporary basis having summers off. Having three children in daycare in summertime is very costly and takes a big chunk out of our income. Due to child care assistance cut and health insurance increases, we can only afford medical insurance for the children. Me and my husband have gone without medical insurance for quite some time. We work for two small employers, and they cannot afford health insurance for us. My husband recently had knee surgery, and because we had no medical insurance, we are financially responsible for a great sum of debt to the hospital and to the clinic. Like many other families, we live paycheck by paycheck. It is very difficult to go ahead when prices are increasing, programs for low income are getting cut, and health costs is on a spiking increase. We have received tremendous support from Head Start program. They have provided Head Start family as well as ours assistance for our free dental exams for the children, and they have referred us to resources that can assist us such as with energy bills and food shelves. Head Start has aided in the growth of our children's educational abilities. My six-year-old son, who's here, Ed Bunn, he just started kindergarten last September. His teacher actually commented to me at the beginning of the year how well he was doing in class, and he was ahead of the students. She even asked if he had attended Head Start, and I said yes, and she replied, "You can tell." They have also influenced me to pursue my education. I currently am enrolled in a business management program, and I will obtain my associate's degree by the end of this year. I will then continue to enhance my education by pursuing a bachelor's degree in the same area. Head Start has been very and extremely supportive of my education goals. A group of policy members even volunteered to be my audience for a speech presentation. They even took out the time to evaluate my speech. Last year, I submitted an application for scholarship for Head Start parents. Recently, I was announced the state and regional level winner. My application has now been forwarded on to the National Head Start Association for consideration of the national level. The scholarship funds will help fund my college education. I cannot emphasize what an impact the Head Start program has had on our family. In my opinion, this is an exceptional program with compassionate employees and deserves the opportunity of growth.
Thank you. Very good. And thank you for coming and for bringing your son and for sharing your story with us. And we hope you win your scholarship.
Thank you.
And if you can stay around for questions, if there are questions, Lisa?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Lisa Malika. I'm a mother of two preschoolers and also a home visitor in the Northfield area. The home visiting position that I'm currently in is through the Early Childhood Initiative Coalition, which is a grant-based program trying to fill some of the niches of disconnect that are occurring in our community. I do my position as a home visitor for about 8 to 10 hours a week and am full-time parent most of the time. But has surprised me at reentering the workforce after 5 years is how things have not changed for the better. Families are more and more isolated, aren't able to assess programs that are currently there through transportation and lack of knowledge of what's available. And in preparing children for preschool, there needs to be interaction with others. And this isolation is really impacting social development, emotional development, and behavioral development. And as the children enter kindergarten without experiences with peers, there becomes a strain on the resources within the kindergarten classroom. I want to really support the home visiting program, that piece, along with more neighborhood-based experiences for families. In Rice County, services are pretty scattered, especially in Northfield. The lack of transportation leads to people not being able to participate in programs that are existing. And also accessing county assistance. Many of the young families I work with need to travel to Faribault, which is nearly impossible when you don't have your own vehicle. In home visiting, I am able to make the meaningful connections for families and not just give them the list of resources and have them begin to call. I'm able to make those bridges to the resources that are going to most benefit them, hence saving time for those agencies and helping to assist in getting needs met sooner. I enjoy the model of the age 3 to grade 3 model, in which there's a continuum of services, which includes the hubs where families have the option of coming to a community-based program, as well as having a home-based visit as an option, so they can choose either a community-based approach or having direct home visiting. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I know the members probably have some questions about home visiting. Is Alfonsina Gutierrez? Is she?
She was not able to make it today, and as a result of how unstable family life is for young people, their issues sprung up. She was not able to find care for her children. She was not able to attend.
Thank you for letting us know. Mm-hmm. Okay. About Mary Ellen Sparrow, Jeff Forrester. You can both come up to the table, and why don't we start with Mary Ellen, if you could state your name for the record.
I would like to thank Representative Eastland for inviting me to speak today, and thank you, Madam Chair, for giving me this opportunity. My name is Mary Ellen Sparrow, and I'm from Cambridge, which is in Representative Eastland's district. I have two young children. My daughter Kathleen is 6 and in kindergarten, and my son TJ is 4 and in preschool. I'm a full-time parent, but I'm also a member of the Cambridge ICANNI Early Childhood Coalition, which I'd like you to note on your agenda is incorrect. It's not the ECFE Coalition. It's a Early Childhood Coalition. It's a nonprofit grassroots organization which is looking to support families with young children ages 0 to 5, and it's a true coalition made up from business leaders and educational leaders as well as parents in our community. I'd like to begin with a short story that I think will help illustrate why I believe investing in early childhood care and education is so important. About 2.5 years ago, I was researching area preschools, trying to determine which one would offer the best opportunity for my daughter to be prepared once she entered kindergarten. So I thought I should ask the kindergarten teacher, and thinking she would have some unique insight as to which children enter the school district well prepared to succeed. And I found her answer quite interesting. She said, "I can't tell which preschools they come from, but I can definitely say that's an ECFE kid." And I thought that was unique, and I said, "Well, how do you know?" And she said, "They can separate from their parents, They know how to sit quietly and listen attentively to a story being read and told. They can raise their hands. They are used to the structure of a classroom, and they take direction very easily from a teacher, which obviously are skills every kindergarten teacher would love all the children to come in so they'd be prepared to learn in a school day. I believe that this story helps illustrate two points. First of all, I feel fortunate to have had the opportunity to have been involved in ECFE and to have been able to research the educational opportunities available to my family in this area. However, I realize that not everyone is aware of the resources available, nor do they know the right questions to ask. Parents are critically important as their parents' first teacher, as you've heard already today, and they need the information and access to quality early childhood educational opportunities that me and my family were able to take advantage of. The second issue raised by my experience is accessibility. It was easy for me financially and transportation-wise to access these programs that were available in my area. However, even if families would like to take advantage of community resources, there are often issues of availability. Presently in the Cambridge-Isani School District, there's a waiting list for our preschool programs, as well as for very limited Head Start offerings in our area. They only come to Cambridge once a week, and there's already a waiting list for that as well. Families also face financial and transportation barriers, especially in rural areas like Isani County. So even if parents are aware of the resources and the importance of early childhood care and education, they're unable to take advantage of these opportunities due to these barriers. So what I would like to ask for is a greater commitment from the legislature to fund ECFE, school readiness, Head Start, and child care programs with an eye to educating parents and families, as well as accessibility, so all of Minnesota's children enter kindergarten, most importantly, with a love of learning and ready to succeed in school and life. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Forrester, welcome to the committee.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Forrester, and I am a parent, an ECFE parent. I have two daughters. My first daughter was born on July 18th, 2000, and the morning after the birth, someone came by and they gave us a bunch of materials, and there was a brochure for ECFE in there. I knew nothing about it. My wife went back to work. I'm a writer, and I had this infant. So I went to ECFE, and that was in 2000. She was very small. And I could find a class near my home, and I started to kind of meet other parents, you know. It was really a great model because I got a lot of parenting skills and strategies that I could use and things that were happening. You know, kids are constantly changing, and I could go in and say, okay, what do you think of this? And not only get advice from other parents, but people that had experience, early childhood educators that could give me very, you know, good information. And I'd like to repeat the story that Roxanne told. When my daughter started first grade, we had our first parent-teacher conference, and the teacher said, did you take your daughter to ECFE? And I said, yeah. She said, well, she's doing really well. She's really ready to learn. She can, you know, and it was the same thing. And she could separate. She had no anxiety going to, you know, kindergarten. She jumped on the school bus and took off. I was the one who was a little bit upset. So she was really ready, and she's in first grade now, and she's doing very well. We had our second daughter, and I wanted to do the same thing. By 2003, the offerings were really sketchy. I have been kind of bounced all over the district, but couldn't get classes. I know a lot of people that can't get classes. People would see us interact with our children and say, you know, wow, that was, you know, that was really great how you diffused that tantrum or whatever it was that was coming up, and say, well, you know, I read this book in ECFE, and then, well, they call ECFE, they can't get a class. So out of our good friends that had children at the same time we did, I'm the only one that continues to stay involved because most people can't get classes. It's not flexible enough for them, you know. One of the things I've noticed with my daughter in first grade is when I get there and I go to the parent advisory councils or the PTA or the leadership councils, the parents that I run across are parents that I met in ECFE. So the parents get involved in education with their kids, and they just kind of get drawn into the system. And I think so there's all these benefits beyond just parents interacting with their kids well, you know. I think that one of the things that was most beneficial when I started was this idea of community, where you know, people have been talking about, you know, family emergencies that come up and things like this. When there were adequate course offerings and I was in the neighborhood where I lived, I developed really strong relationships with other parents in the neighborhood that have carried through to my daughter's first grade. With my second daughter, I don't have that. I've been kind of in all different neighborhoods of the city, and there's no real sense of, you know, cohesion to it in a neighborhood sense. And I think that's a great loss, you know. But and living in the city, it has all kinds of implications, you know, for public safety and things like that. But thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you. And we'll have questions after this. We're going to have Deepa and Maureen come up. And just so you all know, I have to mention this because we're talking about kids. It's my daughter's 10th birthday today, and we went down and took out the scrapbook, you know, the baby book, and looked at it. And if you don't know, I was in my first term for you first termers. So think of being this point in your first term and then having your second child. And so it talked about, I sat up in the front by Gene Pulowski, about he had the, Mike Dalmont used to sit next to me, who was the predecessor to Representative Kranz, and they had the state troopers on call in case I went into labor on the floor. We had a late session that night. But anyway, so we went till 6, and she was born at 11, and she's wonderful, as your parents all know. So we here, too, at the legislature have our stories about our kids. Welcome to the committee. If Deepa would like to start.
Madam Chairwoman, my name is Deepa Diagis. I'm a parent of a 6-year-old kindergartner and a 4-year-old who I call my little Jane Goodall. She hasn't found anything that creeps across that she didn't love to talk to, including a bee, which taught her a lesson one day. I have been attending ECSB at Dayton's Bluff neighborhood in St. Paul for 4.5 years now. I come from a two-parent, loving, caring, middle-class family. I grew up in Sri Lanka, there, and so I figured if I'm going to raise biracial children in this country, I better know how to do this right. So I attended ECFP thinking that might, you know, help me learn how to raise my children. Boy, was I in for the education of my life. Although my mom and dad did an excellent job training, you know, being good role models to me, one of the simple things that our parent educator asked, how do your children know that you love them? How do your children know that you love them? Do you tell them? Those are the kind of things that we ask. You know, it's not good enough you knowing that and doing everything for them, but you need to tell them. You need to hug them. You need to hold them. I'm a full-time parent, and I'm a full-time worker, too. And every morning, regardless of how busy I am, I take at least 2 minutes to hold my daughter and my son and say, good morning, how are you? It's wonderful to hold you here. This is the best time of the day for me. And I say the same thing when I put at least one of them to bed some days too. And so ECFP has been so instrumental in my parenting. What I learned in ECFP is that you don't have to be perfect. It's okay to make mistakes because you can never be perfect. You will make mistakes. I also learned not to beat up on myself. The nice thing about ECFP is that you are not judged. If that's the way you're going to feed your child, oh my God, don't feed that. If you hold that 3-month-old, he'll be spoiled so much. Nobody will tell you things like that. You know, you need to use your own judgment, but you get science-based education. You know, some people, especially in the research field, will tell you that ECFP is not cost-effective. Because they think that I only go to ECFP 2 hours a week. And it costs a lot of money for that 2 hours. But what you're not understanding, what those people are not understanding is that I take my education home with me and put it to work right in the car sometimes going home. And one of the things that long-term ECFP parents in my program will say is, you know, you've seen these bumper stickers, what would Jesus do or what would Wellstone do? But what we say is, what would Mary Ann do? Mary Ann is our parent educator. And so she is, for us, I mean, I am so involved in my child's education. I research, on Mary Ann's insistence, I research the elementary schools since my son was three. Because St. Paul has about 27 schools that my son could attend. It was a daunting task, believe me. So by the time my son was 4.5 years old, I already had narrowed it down to three. And I think I found the best fit for my child, his learning style. I didn't try to make a scientist out of him or whatever, just because I'm a scientist. I just let him do what he wants to do, and my children are the most imaginative children I've seen. They can find a piece of wood and make an entire theatrical thing out of it. And that is, to me, is what ECFP has done. I would have never known to just let them be children rather than putting my own agenda into them. Coming from South Asia, academics, academics, academics. You know all the engineers and doctors from South Asia. Well, for me, I realized by going to ECFP that it is so much more important. Yes, academics are important, but they need to have a love of learning. They need to be able to sit in class. You heard from other parents. You know, ECFP children are the most well-behaved and most prepared, and I can tell you, like the other two before me, yes, it was me who was having a problem. My son is going to school. Oh, my God, he's leaving the nest. That's how I felt, but he has fire, Mom. And that's it. And he wants to take the bus, and I was fretting over him taking the bus for an hour. He doesn't care. He has friends everywhere. His goal for kindergarten was to make friends. And that social boy was not the same social boy that was born. He was so shy, but I have let him be shy and be himself, and that way I was able to let him grow into who he, to the social butterfly that I sent to kindergarten. What a difference the 5 years was made. I wouldn't have been able to do it without ECFP. We have been cut and we have been cut. And Dayton's Bluff is a neighborhood of relatively low-income families and families in transition. And we cannot take any more cuts. And if, you know, somebody told me yesterday that it will take $160 a minimum to restore the cuts. Restore our programs back to what it was before we had to keep cutting. And I really hope that you understand that me as a parent is the first teacher of my children, and I need training. This is the training we get. It's only 2 hours a week, and it goes home with me. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. And I was an ECFP parent, too, and an ECSC parent. I've been to both forums, and it is very, very wonderful. We will hear from Maureen, and then we're going to only have 5 minutes of questions because we have some ADE folks that are going to testify last. I want to make sure we get them in and have questions as well. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, Madam Chair, committee. I'm here to give a different story. I'm here to talk about school readiness. Our family moved here from Chicago, Illinois, 2006, would be December, no, five. We came here on a summer vacation. That's my husband. We came here on a summer vacation with our two small children. And we were here on a vacation. We never thought to move to Minnesota. We were quite happy in Illinois. Our school children weren't in school, so it was fine with us. And as poolside, I'm reading the newspaper, and I look and I read the different articles two different newspapers, and I was like, honey, you need to read this article. You know, we're on vacation, swimming, having a good time. I don't want to hear nothing about this. Plus, they're only 2 and 3 years old. Who cares, you know? Now they're 4 and 6, so they're in school right now, and they're doing wonderful, and these programs are needed by families. I couldn't afford, with both of us even probably working, to have my kids be in the position and at the level that they are in their school, at their school now. They're both leaders in their classroom. They do fantastic. But these programs are needed, very well needed, by working individual family members that are just single parents, mom or dad by themselves. The community needs it. The community needs it because we need to have new leaders. Here's all of your children are the future leaders. These children, grandchildren, they're leaders. Somebody's got to replace you, and they've got to get the education that they need to do it. And these programs are needed by all of us. I love this state, and we're glad we're here. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, yeah, we have some questions. Members, any questions? Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering what the newspaper articles were about.
Oh, they were about funding.
You have to click to the mic.
They were about funding, how much money was spent per child in different districts. Well, since I didn't know what areas they were talking about because I was from Illinois, but I looked at Egan, and it was Maplewood. And they had given some comparisons of different Hennepin, which I didn't know what Hennepin was. Hennepin, St. Paul. It was a statewide. But it was two articles. It was a Pioneer Press, and it was a paper that was local there that was in Mendota Heights. And well, I looked at them, I compared them, and I said, honey, look how much they're spending per child. I think more it was geared towards, the articles were geared more towards K through 12, but we were very enthusiastic about how much was actually put into that, because they did a breakdown and a budget of actually saying that children, each child was getting like $4,500. Most states aren't spending that kind of money to get kids ready for school, let alone keep them in school, you know. So that was interesting to us, and it was key to us, and that's why we're here.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. I think we'll need to continue with AB. I want to thank all of you for coming today and sharing your stories. And members, we're going to hear more of this on ECFE and Head Start and school readiness as well. We're going to end up the hearing today with ABE, Christine Harris and Jessica Mendoza, if you could come forward. And Eric Nash, I don't know if Eric, if you're testifying or just facilitating. You know, I want to thank everybody for taking time to be here. The members, as we get into these issues, and we're going to have bills on all of these, it's very helpful for us to hear from you from all over the state. Let's see. Christine, welcome to the committee.
Hi.
Oh, Eric, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just hoping I can introduce Adult Basic Education and the two learners that we brought today. Again, my name is Eric Nessheim. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Literacy Council, and we're representing adult basic education here today. We appreciate the opportunity to come in and talk a little bit about it. If you remember a few weeks ago, Barry Schaefer from the Department of Education came and talked about adult basic education, English as a second language, GED, diploma, family literacy, citizenship, brush up types of programs. We think it's a really appropriate day for us to be coming today because we have always said, and research shows us that, you know, if you have books in the house, if the parent is educated, reads to the child, is able to help with homework, the chances that a child in that household is going to be literate are much, much greater. And so we come today with a couple of people who've gone through literacy programs and along with that gone through family literacy programs as well. So their children have been involved in their literacy experiences as well. So they're going to talk a little bit about their experience and some of the successes that they've had since they've gone through the programs. And I believe Chris is going first. Chris Harris is going first.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Christine Harris.
kind of nervous here. Today is my birthday, you guys.
Oh, my daughter's birthday too. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I'm from Maplewood. I'm a single mother of a four-year-old. Here's my little girl here. Me and her, last year, we went to the adult basic education program. we started out in 2005. Before I went there, I only wanted to go there to get my GED. But it was more than my GED. Before I attended the adult basic education program, I went there thinking that I would become just a parent with a job. When I went there, I learned how to respect myself, my daughter, and everyone who respected me. I went there learning how to become a better parent, to be a better role model, and also to get more education for me and my daughter. I graduated last year with honors, and my daughter here, she's here to support me and the adult basic education program. She has learned to respect people, to stop spitting. That's really hard for me. That has been really hard for me. She's my only daughter. You know, I'm a single parent. And I'm proud to be here. It is an honor to be here. I have a big family. I'm originally from Chicago. And I came here to support not only myself, but them. I am the only one with a GED in my family. I am the oldest sister of two sisters. And they wanted me to come here to support them. I am a big role model to them. And that's why I'm here. I am now attending a college. Promise Program College is a private college right here in St. Paul for administrative office assistants. I will be graduating this year in May, which I'm very proud of. I have learned how to type. I have learned better English. I have learned office skills, styling skills. And I have a great positive attitude. That's why I'm here. I'm nervous, as you can see. Most importantly, I came here to tell everyone that any parent, single parent, or without children, can make it in life. I didn't have my mom as a role model. I had Margie Walsh as a role model. She guided me to a better place, to the Promise Program. Without Margie, I wouldn't be here. And I'm so grateful for that. I thank God for that, to be here. I don't have any money to pay for education. So I thank everyone who's given that money to me for education. I thank them. I bless them for that. Because I don't have that. I don't have the type of family to support me or help me. If anything, I have welfare. And I don't want to be on welfare. That's why I got my GED. That's why I'm going to the Promise Program now. And that means a lot to me. It has changed my life, my daughter's life. It would never change my mom. To this day, my mom is still using drugs. My mom has been a drug addict since I was a little girl. We do not have a great relationship at all. She tries to support me, but she really wants to support, she wants me to support her drug habit. And that's something I can't do. This little girl here is more important to me than anything. And that's why we're here today. Thank you.
We are very proud of you, and thank you for coming down and sharing your story with us. That's not an easy thing
to do. I'm so nervous.
Wait till you hear the questions. No. We'll probably run out of time. Thank you. Jessica?
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone. I have a nervous too, but I pray to God before here. I pray to God, please give me a word. Please, if you guys don't understand something, repeat to me, please, because I'll be on the level 6 in English class. I'm coming from Hope Center from St. Paul. And I'm here, like Christine said, I'm here for support adult education too. It is really important for us, I think for everyone. You know, it's a second chance for adults. I think everyone has a child inside. And I would like to share my history with you guys. I'm a single mom like Christian too for 3 girls. I have my whole family in Minnesota. I'm a resident for 12 years in Minnesota, and I got a lot of help from them too. And I get out from the welfare a long time ago. Like I have a welfare before too. I get out from there, but I work hard. I have a 2 job before. Now I just got 1 job, but I work 12 hours each day. And I go to school Monday to Thursday, and I usually work on weekends. But my history is in my job. I really need to improve my English better because I didn't have a chance for getting better positions in my job. I already applied 3 times. I want to share with you guys that I already applied 3 times in my job for a better position, and I don't qualify. And my boss told me, well, Jessica, we have another person better step with you. But I told my boss, I don't understand what you say because I have a good attendance. Everything good. And what he said, well, this is the only reason that I have, but he don't want to explain it to me. But I know what is the big reason. But I didn't say anything to him. I just say, well, thank you for the opportunity for apply. But my reason that I know is because my English is not very well for them. And I know it's a lot of people from another country. They need to improve the English. They need to make the skills. They need education. We need to make a good education for good future for us and for our kids too. You know, we need to give a good future for the kids too. And I think adult education is very important for every adult that they don't any reason they don't have a how can I say? They don't have an opportunity before, even in United States. They don't have an opportunity before when they was a teenager for any reason they can finish the GD or the diploma in the school. Half center has too many skills for they can finish the GD or the diploma. Even they have a kids. I have a skills in Hope Center. Right now I have a math. I have a CNC class, math, nursing assistant, and writing and reading. And also I have a parent class, and this is very important for every mother has a child. I learn a lot. I've learned a lot about the kids, how we need to take care of the kids. Because we have a lot of stress, you know. And before, this is true. It's come from my heart. Every word that I say has come from my heart. Before, I really have a lot of stress, and I don't know how to take my kids. I didn't teach my kids, but I say, I don't know the right way. How can I take care? Like, I don't have a lot of help to help my kids make homework. Now I do because I improve my English better and I know how to help them with homework and everything. And I learn in a parent class how can I take the kids for when I get angry, when I have a lot of stress, and they show to us how we can do it. We can, do different way with the kids, with when it's our problems. And also, my big dream, and I pray to God, please give me my dream come true. My big dream is come North registering. Registered North. I wanna be registered North, and now I study North assistant first. They require for getting to the nursing class. They require to get the North assistant, and I still pray God, please help me improve my English in whatever that I need. I know I need to work hard, but I try to tell you to the legislature, everyone, we need help. The adults need a lot of help because we need another change. And that's what I can say. Okay. Sorry.
Well, thank you. It's good to hear your story, and we have a couple of nurses on the committee here, and we have 3 minutes. There must be a question, right? There are going to be no questions out there yet? Mm-hmm. Representative Fritz.
Well, I'm a nurse as well, and I work with nursing assistants who also work to get their GED. And I'm very proud of both of you that you took that step. That was a lot of work, and I realize that. So I wish you both all the best. And I realize I'm in Greater Minnesota, and I know that this is something important for the entire state, so that we can all have better paying jobs and that our children can see us succeeding. And I think that's the real message here, so I just wanted to make that comment, how important the GED is.
I know, yeah, it's very important. That's why, my country never had the opportunity to finish my GED. And a lot of people don't have a good education because we're coming from a poor country. We have to pay for the tuition and for the books, everything. You know, United States, we have those opportunities, but sometimes the school doesn't have money for support too many students, too many skills. I really please everyone think about it, that a lot of people is back to the school. They want to back to the school and finish the GD or make a skill, get good education for get a good future.
Right. I just wanted to one more comment that in nursing home that I work in, many folks, we call it a low level entry position where people do come in at early ages without the high school diploma. So we have a scholarship program that we try to help folks with, and we work and support the workers to get their GED, to go on to get their nursing license, and even beyond that. So we support your efforts, and just keep going, keep working.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I don't know if this helps, but, you know, we all get nervous before we talk, too, and some of us even pray before we talk. So you're right up there with us. Thank you again for coming. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.